Devaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 9, and the text is number 32. Chapter 9 of Canto 3 is Rama's Prayers for Creative Energy. And the scene is, it's Brahma's morning. He just woke up after long night's rest. And he's done his morning sadhana, which consisted of prayers to the Personality of Godhead. And in there's a long series of prayers. And although he knows exactly what to do, he's feeling himself insufficiently qualified to do what he's done so many times before. In other words, he's feeling himself consciously dependent upon the Personality of Godhead for the potency to do what he's supposed to do that day. Recreate that portion of the universe that's been dissolved during the partial devastation of his night. Second thing, besides the creative potency to do so, he is very concerned about, and expresses his concern about, falling prey to pride or false ego. Note, we should be concerned about these things too. Because he's going to create or reconfigure the whole very complicated arrangement. Like Prabhupada once said, the scientists are very proud of creating life. Let them make one mosquito. Just one. He can fly this way, that way, any direction, in a flash. And he can reproduce himself. Let them create one mosquito. So Brahma is not just creating one mosquito, he's creating all the complexity. The statement of the artificial intelligence folks at MIT after several decades of pouring who knows how many gazillions of dollars and how many big brains sweating over how to create something that can do what a brain does, and they realized after 30 years the complexity of the brain is beyond our capacity to even fathom. So let them create one brain. Like, you know, what to speak of all the so Brahma's qualification is great, super great. And he also, because of this qualification, he recognizes there's this tendency for being proud. So our capacity may not be that, it's whatever it is, but the tendency to be proud is in every living being. Prabhupada's statement, even a pauper is proud of his penny. There's that common saying. He told the story of his travel by train with his father one time. If I'm not incorrect, it was they were traveling to Puri, and so they were traveling in the train. They stopped at one of those platforms that everybody can get out for a bit and stretch their legs, and he got out. And he saw on the platform one very poor man and his wife, and they had a burlap bag, and they had some pieces of discarded wood, and they were very carefully placing, like counting their pennies, placing the pieces of discarded wood very carefully in the burlap bag so they could wrap it up. And then Prabhupada said, as a small boy, I could realize even a pauper is proud of his penny. Big man is counting his millions, and the small person is counting his pieces of discarded pieces of wood. whatever it is, whatever little ability we have, whatever little something Krishna gives us, tendency is to be proud. So, second thing he wanted in his prayers was protection from pride. And the third thing that he wanted very strongly was empowerment to relieve those persons that were going to be incarcerated or embodied within this creation. He knew, he explains in detail, the suffering of those who neglect their Krishna consciousness. And because of that keen awareness of what's going to be the result of what he's going to do, he wanted the empowerment to be able to relieve those who are suffering from that suffering. At least to provide the clear means. So, and he described what the means is. The means is devotional service, remembering the Lord, and specifically chanting his holy name. It's right in that prayer section. Who he's praying to is Lord Vishnu, who has manifested his form before him. Because during the night of Brahma, it's dark. It's the planetary systems in the lower regions, they're dissolved. So it's darkness in all directions. So he sees the Supreme Lord. After his mature meditation, the Lord shows his form. And he describes his form, he describes what he sees, and offers these prayers. And after those three prayers that he speaks, suddenly he becomes silent. This is Maitreya speaking to Vidura, and Maitreya says, it was as if he was exhausted from his long periods of austerities and became silent. And then the Lord spoke. So that's where we are. The Lord is now speaking to Brahma. I'll read the three verses just preceding and then this morning's verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then said, O Brahma, O depth of Vedic wisdom, be neither depressed nor anxious about the execution of creation. What you are begging from me has already been granted before. I mean, you've done this many times. And not just you, others that have some service to do. The Supreme Lord gives them the capacity to do it. You need not think about what your own limitations are. You need to think about who's going to enable you to do it. The service that you have. I had a discussion just yesterday with somebody on this point. They were feeling, as we all have some regularly, or at least on occasion, feel, this service that I have to do, it's daunting. My capacity is this, and it requires that, and what to do. So you can look at what you don't have, or you can look at the opportunity to access this descending mercy of the All-Powerful. So he's reassuring Brahma in that way. O Brahma, situate yourself in penance and meditation and follow the principles of knowledge to receive my favor. By these actions, you'll be able to understand everything from within your heart. Nice purport. O Brahma, when you are absorbed in devotional service, in the course of your creative activities, you will see me in you and throughout the universe. And you will see that you yourself, the universe, and the living entities are all in me. Let's do that again. When you are absorbed in devotional service, in the course of your creative activities, you will see me in you. So there's you, and then there's Krishna within you. That's nice. And throughout the universe. Oh. And you will see that you yourself, the universe, and the living entities are all in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Ninth chapter, same message. Same message. So I'm not going to repeat the message because that was the last verse covered. But now here's another metaphor to help us understand what Lord Vishnu just told Brahma. You will see me in all living entities, as well as all over the universe, just as fire is situated in wood. Only in that state of transcendental vision will you be able to be free from all kinds of illusion. So, my dear Prabhus, would you like to be free from all kinds of illusion? Yes, Maharaj. Please give me relief. Okay, so here's the method and Srila Prabhupada's purport. It's an important verse. Brahma prayed that he might not forget his eternal relationship with the Lord during the course of his material activities. In answer to that prayer, the Lord here says that he should not think of existing without a relationship with his omnipotency, not just him, but specifically his omnipotency. And then he explains. The example is given of the fire in wood. The fire kindled in wood is always the same. Kindled means it's coming out. It's not in a dormant state, stored. Like this little table here, that's fire stored, but kindled is coming out. The fire kindled in wood is always the same, although the wood may be of different types. Similarly, the bodies within the material creation may be specifically different according to shape and quality, but the spirit souls, that's like the kindled fire, the spirit souls within them are not different from one another. I mean, these different qualitatively. The quality of fire, namely warmth, is the same everywhere. And the spiritual spark, or part and parcel of the Supreme Spirit, is the same in every living being. Thus, the potency of the Lord is distributed all over his creation. So when he says, I am distributed all over creation, you will see me everywhere and everything in me. There are different aspects of that absolute truth that he may be referring to in one part of the sentence and another aspect of the same absolute truth in another part of the sentence. Or the Achintya Veda Abheda Tattva philosophy package with a ribbon. The transcendental knowledge alone can save one from contamination of material illusion, since the Lord's potency is distributed everywhere. A pure soul or devotee of the Lord can see everything in relationship with the Lord, and therefore he has no affection for the outer coverings. The affection specifically means like, you want to own it or you want to enjoy it. And from that illusory conception that it's up for grabs, you can become the proprietor of it, or that you can somehow become the legitimate enjoyer of it. That mistake, that fundamental mistake, of the living entity thinking, I am Purusha, I'm the enjoyer, is checked by recognizing who is the Purusha and who is the enjoyer, who is the source, who is the proprietor. Proprietorship's a big issue. It's a big issue in material society. Look what's going on in the world over proprietorship. Who owns the oil? Who owns the, you know, where's the territory? This is mine. And or political ideologies. It belongs to the state. It belongs to the worker. It belongs to the one, the capitalist. It belongs to nobody. it belongs to the strongest. So many different ideas out there. It's discussed explicitly in Ishopanishad because Ishopanishad is a text about proprietorship. The theme of Ishopanishad is, who does everything belong to? Unto whom is everything, from whom is everything coming? That's the invocation mantra. Everything comes from Purnam, the source. And once you know that, then you live accordingly. Isavashyam. And etc. And then it's all about, the rest of the verses are expanding on that theme of proprietorship. And God is the proprietor. Understanding that protects one. And then there's the practical application of God as the proprietor. It's like how you see this stuff all around. What's the stuff all around? It's an energy of the Supreme Lord. It may be opulent, but that opulence belongs to the source of the opulence. So how do you then relate to something that's opulent when it already belongs to somebody? Well, first of all, you don't try to put it in your pocket. Make it yours. You're a thief if you do that. Then what do? Like, just look the other way? Say no. If you, the proper is, see it in relation to the Supreme, appreciate the Supreme, engage that opulence in the service of the Supreme in an appropriate way. In the service of the Supreme. The mode of service follows recognizing proprietorship. Yes? That's the first of the Chatra Sloki verses of Bhagavad Gita. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matak Sarvam Pravartate, in which Krishna says, like backwards and forwards, or forwards and then backwards, I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. Oh, you have to look at it. I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. So, iti madva, bhajante mam. Thus knowing, what do? Serve the Supreme. Very easy math. If you're an honest person. If you're a dishonest person, then you get a different answer. But if you're an honest person, that's the conclusion. So it's protection. It's a form of protection. Knowledge is, it's essential, yet insufficient. Because knowledge alone, you can still goof up. You can know better and still do something foolish. So it has to go the next step, to devotion. And then devotion is the real protection. Devotion can uproot even the tendency for sinful activity. Even the tendency for acting outside of the interest of the Supreme. Knowledge is necessary but insufficient. There's some mathematical language like that. Necessary but not sufficient. So, this is Lord Vishnu speaking to Lord Brahma. His, you know, he's engaging him in this very confidential service. So, Lord Brahma's post is so confidential that here's two things. In the Bhagavatam, it's said that the post of Brahma can be occupied only by someone who for 100 lifetimes has flawlessly executed varna and ashram duties. Try to do it for one day. 100 lifetimes. And if there isn't somebody that matches that qualification, he does it himself. It's such an important post. But being a representative of the cyclic succession, that's supposed to be us, followers of the cyclic succession, we have a very responsible service to do. We have to show by example, here's how you do it. Here's how you follow the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. That's what we're here for. To like speak it and to do it. Very responsible post. Or like, you know, become a parent. Have a child. And the responsibility of... Are you all right? The responsibility of parenthood is to take that spirit soul within the little body and deliver them to beyond birth and death. That's like, who's got that qualification? That's the responsibility. Human life is a life of responsibility. And Vaishnava life is the greatest responsibility. Within society, if the Vaishnavas don't get it, where's the rest of society going to go? It's a very responsible service. Very responsible service. So we're getting, like, roadmap, very good instructions how to carry out our daily duties. It's the morning and we're going to do something today. So how do you begin your morning? Follow our original preceptor, Narasampradaya, Lord Brahma. Fix your mind completely upon the personality of Godhead. In these three different ways, the necessary qualification to carry out the service, being protected from pride and thinking, I'm the doer, just see how I can do all these nice things. And being empowered to deliver the remedy for those that are covered by ignorance and rebellious in their spirit towards the personality of God. That's what the material world is. It's a difficult place. So here specifically is instruction how to check that tendency for pride. Tendency for thinking of oneself as the doer. It's very similar, not identical, but very similar to Arjuna's response to the Chatrasloki verses of Bhagavad Gita. After Arjuna realizes, you're not just my friend, you're the personality of Godhead. You're it. You're the source of everything. You're the supreme. He requests, please give me the ways by which I can always think of you. Because I don't want to forget you. That's the protection. You're the supreme and I'm the servant. And I don't want to forget that. Because the tendency is, we can have nice sadhana, go to work and or go do whatever you're going to do, and completely forget it. Like get absorbed in Kartaham Iti Manyate program and all day long, and at the end is what happened. Yes? So, how to stay always, Arjuna's asking, how to always remember you. So how does the rest of the 10th chapter unfold? Krishna describes ways in which he can always remember him by seeing him in the material creation. The vibhutis, the superlative excellences of Krishna's external, it doesn't mean all the rest of the external energy isn't Krishna's. But we can especially remember him because he's the best of everything. And everything else that's not the best, that's also him. And that's what he's saying here. Only in that state of transcendental vision will you be able to be free from all kinds of illusion. How? You will see me in all living entities as well as all over the universe, just like fire is situated in wood. So, the fire that's situated in wood, here's some wood, wood table. I don't see the fire. We look at the world, I don't see Krishna. Show me Krishna, show me God. I don't believe. Like that, people say, Swamiji, can you show me God? Have you seen God? I don't get it so much, but Prabhupada got it. So how can you see the fire and wood? It's there. No, it's no fire in the wood. Look, there's no heat. It's stored. Jagat avyakta murtina. By me and my unmanifest feature, I pervade and support the entire universe. Well, I don't see him. He's pervading and supporting it. So, like fire within wood. And then there's the stored, and then there's the flame coming out of the wood. So he's just focusing in this purport about in the flaming part, or the kindled part. So there's flame, this wood started to burn, or that wood started to burn, or, you know, whatever wood started to burn. The fire is the same. The way that it's stored looks different. So we have different bodies, different species, all kinds of variety. But we should know within there's this spiritual entity. That's and both the bodies and the spiritual entity, he's comparing the spiritual entity to the kindled fire. Without the presence of the soul, the body's not animate. It not only stops acting, it disintegrates. So souls integrate and animate. That's the kindled flame. So if we look at the different entities as kindled flames, and minus the kindled flame, it's ashes. Or just disintegrated matter. Like Isha Upanishad says, let the air merge the totality of air, and let when the disintegration takes place, let may my mind be fixed upon you alone. And before that happens, let our mind be fixed upon him alone. And who is he? He's this fire within the wood. He's the, by his potencies, he's everywhere. He's situated everywhere. And he's also situated within. It's a contradiction, apparently. It's like, you know, it's saying we're situated in this room and we're situated outside the room. We can be one or the other, but we can't be both. But Krishna can be both because of the different aspects of him. Because in the Bhagavatam Chaturshloki, the first one is, before creation, I alone exist. During the period of cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. And after cosmic annihilation, guess what? I alone exist. So in one sense, in the abheda sense, in the non-different sense, everything is Krishna. But we're not pantheists and we don't say the table is Krishna. I go, Krishna. It's an aspect of Krishna. Without Krishna, this energy doesn't manifest. Although it's in its unmanifest state, it's also Krishna's energy. So see Krishna everywhere through the agency of his inconceivable energies. That's what's being said. In answer to the prayer of Brahma, please let me not forget you in the course of going to the office. The Lord says that he should not think of existing without a relationship with his omnipotency. We have a relationship with him, and therefore we have a relationship with his, because we have a relationship with him. And the relationship with his is it's his. And it's, that means it's meant for him. Whatever it is that we do. You know, so to say the flip side is if we forget that, we're in illusion. The other side is if we remember it, we're protected from illusion. And, you know, we're somewhere in between. Remembering and then forgetting, remembering and forgetting, and trying to remember and struggling. We don't like to struggle, so then we try to remember. Krishna can give that constant remembrance of him if we want it. Yes? Matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha sarvasya shaham riddhi sannivishto. He's situated within and can give remembrance or forgetfulness. And here in the Bhagavatam, it's external, it's a sound vibration that's prompting remembrance. We're getting that prompt because we want. We want remembrance. So the prompt is there. And we can practice Vishnu Smaranam based on really strongly executed Shravanam Kirtanam. It will happen. The happening is not mechanical. It's not like memorizing a sloka or some, you know, something. How do you work some electronic device? You learn it, and then you know it, and then it's like something, it's just a piece of information that you have accessible. Remember somebody's phone number, but now because it's all digital, you just like press a button. You don't know anybody's phone number. Without looking at my little device, I don't know anybody's phone number. Anyway. It's not that kind of remembrance. It's remembrance of something that's already with us. It's not just accessing memory files either. It's the constitutional nature of the soul that we have this relationship with Krishna, that remembrance. And that, oh yeah, this is his. It's the remembrance of like waking up from a dream. Oh yeah, this is reality. I'm meant for serving Krishna. That kind of remembrance. Remembrance of our relationship with Krishna in even further detail of which specific spiritual identity. That's progressively becomes our remembrance. Through the medium of Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, we're being given here a really important piece of our being Krishna conscious throughout the day, even when engaged in material activities. That's specifically mentioned, and it'll be more described again. Because his concern is, I see you, and I know I've got to do this thing, but I have to create a place where people are going to suffer. He wasn't complaining, I don't want to do it. He was saying, you know, what can be done so that they can get relief from that circumstance? How can I not get sucked into thinking I'm the doer? So this is protection. If we receive it properly, we're protected from illusion specifically, and we're elevated to the position of always remembering Krishna. The last part of the purport. Since the Lord's potency is distributed everywhere, a pure soul, a devotee of the Lord, can see everything in relationship with the Lord. And therefore, he has no affection for the outer coverings. Those things that we think to be mine, we have affection for. Like my body, or my family, or my possessions, because it came from my work. I have my money, and so my money, I brought my possessions, and I have affection. Or it can extend beyond, and you know, my community, or my nation, or my species. Keep going. Since the Lord's, I'll read the sentence again. Since the Lord's potency is distributed everywhere, a pure soul, a devotee of the Lord, can see everything in relationship with the Lord, and therefore has no material affection for the outer coverings. That pure spiritual conception makes him immune to all contamination of material association. Like when you go to the workplace or you do whatever, just live in the world and see stuff and I'm bombarded for the senses with material energy, sounds, smells, tastes, so and so forth, ideas, desires, stuff, outer coverings. Immunization from all of that. What a relief. So you can move about a disease-infested, epidemic place. You've got immunization. Just hearing Lecture of Prabhupada was describing, it was in Mauritius, and that morning a medical practitioner had come and had given him an injection for yellow fever. And he was describing it was painful. But painful injection to prevent one from, a disease that's far more painful. So, in the beginning, the restraining ourselves from basic gross forms of sense gratification, for some people, it's impossible. For us, it's maybe inconvenient, or for some people, a little painful. But we do that because it'll help us get protection. And to be able to hear with attention, instead of mind distracted, hear with attention. And with that hearing, be further protected. Have your devotion to Krishna more awakened. It's a really nice verse. The pure devotee never forgets the touch of the Lord in all circumstances. We can say, even the difficult ones. Not just when it's going smoothly, but when there's bumps. When it's like, it hurts. There's stuff that goes on that hurts. And to remain mindful of the Lord in all circumstances. The pure devotee never forgets the touch of the Lord in all circumstances. Free from illusion. Transcendental vision. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Yes?
So, Maharaj, you were mentioning the first verse of the chapter Shloki Bhagavatam. The Lord says, I alone existed before. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says to Arjuna that there was never a time when I or you did exist. So, how can we?
Go to the next part of the Chatur Sloki Bhagavatam, and what does he say? During the period of cosmic manifestation. So, I alone exist includes Arjuna and all the kings. To reconcile the apparent contradiction is found in the Achintya Beda Abheda Tattva philosophy. There is a oneness aspect, And that can be emphasized. In the Bhagavatam Chatra Sloki, that oneness aspect is emphasized. I mean, specifically, the impersonalists love that verse. But they don't understand the Veda portion also. It's like, you know, the people that say, the Father and I are one. They like that part, but they forget the part, God the Father has sent me, from the Bible. How do you put those two together? You just forget one of them, just say one of them. So, there's both. I alone exist. During the period itself, and there's never was there a time when individuality exists in the realm of the absolutes. Plurality exists in the absolute realm. It's a different kind of plurality than this kind. This is a perverted reflection of that. All there is there's two things. There's Krishna and there's Krishnas. There's not a third thing. So Krishna can speak about Krishnas, and he can speak about Krishna. And there's nothing else to talk about. That's all there is. But both are existing simultaneously, the oneness and the diversity.
Yes. A little bit on a similar thing.
Okay.
Someone asked me, and I forget the word in Sanskrit. There's a type of a mukti, sayujya.
Sayujya.
Yeah. In that, one merges into the God. Now, I have a difficulty understanding and explaining that myself because
it's a type of liberation.
But we don't believe that one merges into.
But it's temporary.
It's temporary.
Aroya krishena parampadam tadapatantyadod. So. Yes, because it's likened. Here's how you can perhaps understand it or explain it. Both. We're in the Earth's atmosphere. This is a lecture I heard Prabhupada long ago about space exploration. We're in the Earth's atmosphere, and you have a rocket booster, and to overcome the gravity. In the atmosphere of Earth, now it's soaring in space. Zoom, 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 soaring around in space, outside of the Earth's atmosphere. How long can you stay there? Unless there's shelter in a place where you can actually sustain, you must come back. So, that's Sayuja Mukti. Entering into this state where it's not this. A state of neutrality. But without shelter, you can't remain. So one comes back. That's Sayuja Mukti. It's a state of neutrality. Liberation from the features of karma and the features of guna. Neutrality. But what's the positive activity of the active soul? It's unknown. And after some time, the natural tendency of the soul, minus shelter in the personality of Godhead, I want relationship. I want activity. I want love. I want. Patantyata. And falls again. That's what Sayuja Mukti is. Anything else? Yes?
Remember hearing Srila Prabhupada say that even a drunkard, if he remembers that the taste of the wine is actually Krishna, then what does he say? He'll become purified? And so in that sense, Srila Prabhupada saying that one is attached to simple activities, he develops a certain amount of, if he's attached, he has a little bit of protection if he's at least compromising by remembering Krishna when he's doing that activity.
Yes. Krishna is pure. He's all pure. Even something in a very contaminated state comes in contact with something that's all pure. What happens? That which is impure become purified. Naturally, it happens. So he's not advocating continue drinking wine and just think of Krishna as cool. That's not. But even in that contaminated state, if one thinks of the all pure, one becomes purified. Gradually. Yes.
Krishna Maharaj. So that mukti, is it similar to merging into Brahman?
It is. Not similar to, it is. It's identical with. And just to complicate things a little bit, there's two kinds of Sayuja Mukti. This is spoken by Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, mukti implies merging, losing one's identity. And there's two kinds. One is entering into the effulgence of the Supreme Lord, and another is merging into the body of the Supreme Lord. That's what Shishupal did. Right? Into the body of Krishna. And he said, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, of the two, merging into the body of the Lord is more abominable. Because one sees, here's the form of the Lord. And one's enviousness is so strong. I want to merge into the body of the Lord. So, he didn't like Sayuja Mukti. He didn't like even the term Mukti because it implies most people think of the Sayuja form. There's four other kinds of Vaishnava liberation, also with nice names. Samipya, Sarupya, Sharasti, Salokya. So, those are Vaishnava liberations, and the other is impersonal liberation. The impersonal liberation, again, is just neutrality. Not positive anything, just neutrality. No, it's suspended. It cannot dissolve. The material individuality dissolved. Spiritual individuality suspended.
But that thing happens in Brahman effulgence also. When one gets merged into them, then the material identity is lost, but spirituality...
It's suspended. Spiritual individuality is suspended. Suspended is like, here's an example that Prabhupada gave. Put a person in a straitjacket in a padded cell and blindfolded and gagged. How do you express individuality? It's there. It's just suspended. Circumstantially. It's just a circumstance. It's not, you can't take away individuality from the soul. It can be suspended by that ardent desire. Let me out of here. And so they merge into Brahman. But that's not natural, being in a straitjacket in a padded cell, bound and gagged and tied to a chair. It's very unnatural. That's right. That's the similarity. The difference is, in one case, according to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, in one case, he saw the form of Krishna. And his enmity towards Krishna was over the top. It wasn't just like envious. He was mad. I haven't read this anywhere, but Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj described that when Shishupal was born, he was born in a household that was a relation to Krishna. So as a small child, in the household, someone spoke Krishna's name. Hearing Krishna's name as a small child, he started to scream. You know, there's different kinds of crying of children. One is, and he just continued to scream. They wondered, what happened? What's wrong with him? And nothing they did would stop. He just kept screaming and screaming, and he all day long and all night long, and the next day and the next day, and it went on for a month. Finally, he stopped screaming. He was over the top. His enmity towards Krishna. Towards Krishna. That was Shishupal.
I have one more.
Yeah.
So why is there evolution and there is creation? And why does Krishna want that in Kaliyuga there should be so much of vice?
It's not that he wants. He doesn't want creation to begin with. We want it.
But if we were all with Krishna and Brahma created it, whether that time we were wanting it?
So your question is, how did the living entity make the mistake of wanting to enjoy separately from Krishna? That's your question?
I think that will be just we are envious. We have the desire.
Yes. We have free will and we misused it. That's the bottom line. So, Krishna doesn't want us to misuse our free will. He wants us to be happy. He doesn't want us to suffer. He doesn't want us to be devoid of love. He wants us to be in that nice situation. And we're doing one of those. So, Prabhupada describes it this way. It's like a child that says, I'm leaving home. They can just leave home without saying, but they say, I'm leaving home. I'm 18 now, I'm leaving home. You can't stop me. Oh, please don't go, please don't go. I'm leaving. You can say, you can give your permission or not, I'm leaving. I've got free will, I'm 18. So what do the parents say? Whatever persuasion, Krishna is persuading us, please, don't make this mistake. All right. But please know, this is your home. We love you. Your room is waiting. Everything is here. We won't even remind you that you, like, did this thing. Just come back. At any time, please come back. Then sending invitations, please come back, and but not interfering. So the place, this realm where we are, by design, is to let us know it's not a good choice. It's a place of suffering. By design, it's a place of suffering. Prison houses are places of suffering. That's the kind of place it is. And depending on how far out we go, it gets more dark and more suffering. And because it's more sinful, more suffering, it's more of a prompt to come back. Now, what's your question specifically within that frame?
Actually, I'm a little bit confused with the existence when Krishna says that he was the only one before the creation. And then again he's saying, I am within you and everything is within me. When Krishna was all alone, before the creation...
There was no Krishna is all alone. Because it says his energy is dormant. Avyakta. The living entities, they're eternal. They're not like, once upon a time there weren't living entities and then some time passed and then Krishna thought, gee, I guess we need some... And there's living entities. They're eternal. So it's cyclical. And the living entities may be within the body of Mahavishnu, but they're there. They're just in a dormant susupti state, deep sleep state, consciousness which is not like under anesthesia. The body that's on the operating table under anesthesia is not dead. The consciousness of the soul is reduced by mechanical means in such a way that the consciousness is not registering, but it's there. So the living entities, when Krishna says, before the creation, I alone exist, means the souls, his energy, they're all parts of him. This is in the, please don't make the mistake, we just went over this, that when he says the oneness, the difference doesn't exist. They simultaneously exist. There's difference. Now he's speaking about the oneness aspect of him. I alone exist in the unmanifest state, in the manifest state, in the unmanifest state. It's me and my energies. That in the oneness sense. Then now there's a different sense between the energetic and the energies. We could look over there, or we could look over here. And we have this mind that's a binary processor, and it can't, it's either one or a zero, it's not both. But in transcendence, it's simultaneously both. So if you try to understand with the faculty of the binary processor, the mind, you'll spin. You won't grasp it. So what's our alternative? Hearing, let it touch your heart, and some further clarity can come. But it's not like it. Eventually, we'll get our binary processor worked up so we can hold both. It's accepting the inconceivable potencies of the Lord is necessary to understand God. Jiva Goswami writes in his Sandarbhas. Inconceivable means inconceivable. We can describe them as if they're conceivable, but when they're working, it's not. That's nice. We're not God. It's a nice realization. There are things that can exist even we don't understand them, and that's just fine. Not that if I can't understand them, they can't exist. They can be described. They are described. And what's our program is to hear these wonderful descriptions. Just see how wonderful is Krishna. He can be within everything and outside of everything at the same time. He's cool. And he does through the agency of his unlimited potencies. If I don't accept he has unlimited potencies, I've effectively brought him down to my level. But that's silly. You can't. That's not God. It's our foolishness. It's not God. He's not on our level. He has inconceivable, unlimited, inconceivable potencies. And we can describe how he displays them. That's what's happening. He's describing to Brahma, you're going to work with my energies. Please always remember those energies that you're working with, they're mine. I am present everywhere through these potencies. So how can you like forget me if you're remembering that? But if you forget that it's my potencies, then you're going to forget me. You'll get entangled in illusion. That's so he's offering protection. Very nice. Nice to feel protected. He's like, someone cares enough to want to protect us. We just have to receive it. And then we're protected. Something else? Yes?
The application level, like, let's say you go to work and you see so many, like,
stuff going on, yeah.
So, how, like, what does it mean to say that I'm seeing the Lord's potency? Like, it's like when I see the table, I don't know, Krishna, is it like that? Or what is the application level of
that? Well, it's not a matter of mental adjustment, because you try to do the mental adjustment program, you'll be tired before, like, you know, 15 minutes is over. It's not mental adjustment program. It's a Awakening of Spiritual Consciousness program. And when that Awakened Spiritual Consciousness program is there, then you'll see. It's like when the light is on, you can see. And when darkness is there, you can't see. Objects are there, reality is there, but you can't see because it's dark. So with the light coming on, this is describing what you see when the light's on. It's not a matter of adjusting your mind. It's awakening your love for Krishna. Your understanding of who Krishna is, and therefore I love him. Everything, so it's a gradual process of awakening our dormant Krishna consciousness, and then one can see. So there's some knowledge that we can confirm. Am I seeing properly, or am I hallucinating or imagining something? So we have confirmation from Scripture. This is what you'll see. He's saying like that. But, you know, the previous, immediate previous verse. No, the verse, two verses ago. O Brahma, situate yourself in penance and meditation and follow the principles of knowledge to receive my favor. So when Krishna's favor is bestowed, this is what you'll see. So we're on the sadhana side. So what you need to do when you go to work is have done very nice sadhana the morning before, and you'll be to some degree protected. There's some light that's on. To some degree protected from the illusion that says, wow, look at all this enjoyment out here. Or, look at this terrible suffering out here. Instead of seeing service to Krishna, opportunity. Practicing your Krishna consciousness in the workplace. It's a gradual process. So when you see the table, Krishna has put this here. This is something that's meant for me to use to respect, because it has some place in Krishna's program of serving him. Let me use it that way. It's regulative at this stage. And let me not use it like, you know, there's my computer. Let me not use it as a tool for sense gratification. People can easily use such things for sense gratification. The bell's not ringing. Does anyone else? Can we recall the context?
You were saying about Krishna and Krishnas.
Is that it?
Yeah. So you mentioned it.
There's two things. There's Krishna and there's Krishnas. So if we recognize this is his, I can't make it mine because it's his. Fundamentally, it's not even like a Krishna says, okay, you can take it, it's yours. It's his. Fundamentally. So Krishna may make some arrangements. That's the Isavasyam verse. Something is for your maintenance. One should not accept other things knowing well to whom it belongs. But even that part that's your maintenance, it's also his. You know, the body. Or your husband, or the car, or, you know, food on the table, or whatever it is, the air that you breathe. It's Krishna's energy. It's Krishna's. It's his. And we're moving about his place. Let us be respectful of it's his place. And according to the indications that we know from Scripture, what is using his that's pleasing to him. And, you know, at least in a regulative way, strive to do like that. In a spontaneous way, it happens because of love. The prompt, all kinds of nice prompts are there from how to spontaneously serve him. But we're not there, so it's the regulative kind.
So how do you
Sure. It's right in the verse. I'll read the sentence again, or the purport, excuse me, fourth time. Brahma prayed that he might not forget his eternal relationship with the Lord during the course of his material activities. In answer to that prayer, the Lord said that he should not think of existing without a relationship with his omnipotency. So the relationship is, it's his. It's his omnipotency. This is one little piece, and the whole thing is the unlimitedness of his omnipotency. And it's all his. And I have a relationship with him, and it has a relationship with him, and I have a relationship with his omnipotency. That's recognizing that it's his and using it in his service. Conscientiously, carefully, guided by Guru Sadhu Shastra. And then in the advanced stages, it's spontaneous. It's proprietorship. And with proprietorship comes who's the enjoyer of it. I mean, we follow those, even in our, even in Maya, we follow that law. If someone is the owner of something, then they're the enjoyer of that something. And let's go to the spiritual plane. Krishna is the proprietor of it. He's the enjoyer of it. And here we are. We're part of his. What can we say is ours? Yes. At the same time, that's the answer to the question that I, you know, it's a nice meditation. We can't say our body is ours, it's taken. We can't even, you know, whatever is connected to the body is not ours. What about the soul itself? You can't say the soul is ours. The soul is also Krishna's. So what's ours? Our relationship with Krishna. But as you said, so that's ours, but at the same time, it's for Krishna's enjoyment. That one thing that is ours is for Krishna's enjoyment. And that means everything else is also. If we have that one thing, then everything else follows. It's like your question about, you know, when you go to the workplace and see a table. The essence is that our relationship with Krishna. And if I'm in my relationship with Krishna, then I can also have proper relationship with his omnipotencies. It's for his enjoyment. Because that's me. I'm for his enjoyment. Although, that's my sole possession. Or the way that in Sharanagati, the songs, the concept of Atmanivedana in the stages of, or not stages, the symptoms of surrender. Krishna, I am yours. And you are mine. It's not like mine. You put Krishna in your pocket and you walk down the street and look what I got. I've got Krishna is mine. But it's the relationship with Krishna is mine. Krishna, I am yours. And that's the sense of, like the earlier question of, you know, Krishna alone exists. I am yours. I am part of what is Krishna and Krishna's. And that's, both are Krishna. Krishna and Krishna's. It's all Krishna. That's the oneness aspect. So Krishna, I am yours. And you are mine. You're my everything. You're the only thing that I think of as mine. My relationship with you. It's nice. Very nice. And because my relationship with you is meant for your enjoyment, everything that I do is follows. It's the bhakti principle extended to the world around us. But something that can help us, what Lord Vishnu is saying to Brahma, specific to his material activity of creating, or our material activity of whatever it is that we do that's in relation to temporary, this energy that's all around us, is to see that omnipotency in relation to Krishna, and that's part of our relationship with Krishna. We have a relationship with His omnipotency. And it's not proprietorship. It's recognizing His proprietorship and how to responsibly act where something is the property of somebody else, or everything is the property of the same somebody else. How do we act responsibly in that regard? Now, that's from the devotee side. From Krishna's side, He's loving. Like, you know, if I come to visit your house, it's not like, oh, I like this little recording device. That, I mean, you may think, wow, that's great. Maybe we'd like to give something to Maharaj that we can use in the service. But I don't just like pocket it. So it would be disrespectful. So there's a relationship. From Krishna's side, we have things that we may need to serve Him. He supplies. He's happy to supply. Here. But from our side, it's His. And we're using that in His service. He gives us some ability. He gives us some intelligence. He gives us some skill. He gives us some resource. He takes it away. It's fine because it's His. I can serve some other way besides this way that just got taken away. I can't take away my service, my spirit of serving, in any circumstance. That's nice. That's protection. Yes? Okay. Anything else?
What is the active will and the passive will of Krishna?
What? Say it a little louder.
Actively and passively.
Active will
and passive will of Krishna.
I don't know. What's passive? Maybe you can answer your own question. Passive will. Sounds pretty mystical to me.
Because I read in a book that...
You read in a book? Oh.
I actually listened in a lecture.
Okay. Passive will. Active will. Sounds really mystical.
Does it relate to anything neutral? Krishna always takes neutral position on the living entity.
The only thing that makes any sense right at this moment is Krishna's internal potency, His will is active, and His external potency, it's indirect. He's not willing that living entities, you know, make multiple choices and based upon those multiple choices, they make some wrong choices, and then they suffer. And so He wills their suffering. He doesn't actively will their suffering, but He creates that place where they wanted to enjoy, and He oversees through His expansion of the Purusha avatars, the whole affairs of the material creation. So it's more indirect than passive. He sanctions, although that's not what He wants. That's the only thing that makes any sense of passive willing. Maybe you go back and listen to wherever you heard that from, and maybe the answer is found in the lecture. Yes?
So, Maharaj, I have three questions related to Sanjum.
Maharaj, we don't have much time. In evening, maybe.
So he's right. We have to end. Go ahead.
So, at the end of the Brahma's life, when all the living entities and everything becomes unmanifested within the body of Mahavishnu, so can we consider that similar to...
No. No.
Shishupala merging into the
no.
body.
Next question.
So, in the Sayuja Mukti, the liberation is like you don't come back again. So.
No, you can come back again. You will come back again. Sayuja, you will come back again. You go up into outer space, you will come back again.
Why is it called as a liberation even?
Because it's neutrality. It's not, not, and not. That kind of liberation. There's no, when it is, it's just not, not, and not. Not the modes of nature. Not karma. Desires are suppressed or dormant. But that's not the natural state of living entity. The natural state of living entity is with desire. Next.
The other question was answered when you
okay.
said yes.
Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Jai.
Srila
Prabhupada Swami Maharaj ki jai.
Maharaj, I'm going to receive this.